And welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Keezer here with you on this Tuesday morning. PK, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good morning. Happy to be here. Have to monitor my button now in my new seat over here, sitting in the Rex Road chair.
You are.
I thought I'd take a different angle. It's easier for us to be face-to-face
it
when
is.
I'm not in that chair.
It is.
I always appreciate the invitation. I've got my caffeine. I've got my water. I'm searching for some kind of regular breakfast that's a lot better than the trash that I'm eating, but I did not find it today. So I'm accepting suggestions there. And I'm ready to go. I did not watch the game last night. And I did not plug into these NBA playoffs very much outside of my Knicks,
yep,
who are resurgent. And I could tell you why in two answers.
Okay.
One is that everybody was hurt.
That is true.
Right?
A lot of injuries.
Butler, Allen, Mitchell, Randall, Brunson, Giannis, Lillard, Leonard, Williamson, Embiid was playing poorly. That's a two all-star teams worth of people hurt. And then I just ran down the series. 3-4-0 series, 6-4-1 series, 4-4-2 series, and 3-4-3 series. So 56% of the series were either 4-0 or 4-1. And 19% of the series were 4-3. And if I'm going to get interested in series that I don't have a rooting interest in, I need them to be nail biters.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to watch a game 7. I'm not going to watch a game 3 nearly as much.
No.
And it didn't present it to me.
This might have been the worst NBA postseason that I can remember. And I think Boston is really good. So I think they probably would have won anyway had everybody not been hurt.
But the rest of the league kind of did them a disservice, yeah, and it feels cheapened.
It feels cheapened, and like you said, it just wasn't – like the conference finals weren't compelling. The NBA final was awful. I mean, other than Dallas winning by 32 the other day, which I'm starting to think was more and more just so Boston could go back home and win it on their home floor. Like, it was nothing to write home about in the final. So, like I said, I think the Celtics are really good. I didn't watch a ton of the NBA finals. I didn't watch a ton of the NBA playoffs. And I'm typically a guy that, you know, I don't like the NBA as much as I do the NFL or the NHL or college football, but I'll watch the NBA. I didn't do a whole lot of watching this postseason.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm anti-NBA generally, but I look at it and I say, like, who did the Celtics beat?
Really,
like,
none.
I mean, you know, if Denver hadn't gotten picked off,
yep,
that would have been more compelling to me. But I don't think the Pacers are particularly good. And I don't think the Knicks are Celtics level. I think they would have put up more of a fight if they were healthy than getting swept. But to beat the Heat, the Cavs, the Pacers, and the Mavs doesn't seem like much of a run to me. And look, they can only play who's in front,
yeah,
of them. They don't control that. They were impressive in doing so. And, you know, they're champs. People are talking, you know, on the show that's on before us on the way in about their potential to make a huge run now.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe they do. I would hope that some teams in the East, you know, who have good cores could mount up a challenge for them. You know, you look at those teams. The Knicks are talented and feel like they're one player away. The Bucks, things didn't come together for, but should be pretty good, right?
Yep.
Pacers, you know, are always a meh team to me, but, you know, Cavs, Heat, you know, it's not a great conference by any means, but I don't think that you could crown the Celtics. Show before us was doing teams that have the potential in all sports to win like 3 out of 5,
yep,
and two in a row in the next 5 years, starting with the Celtics last night, and had the Celtics on that list. I sure hope not, as a Boston hater.
Yeah, it's been nice seeing them have a little bit of a drought. Their first championship in the NBA since 2008, their 18th overall. So congrats to the Celtics, I guess. They get the NBA championship done and wrapped up last night. But like I said, not a very intriguing NBA playoffs.
Curious to see ratings.
I am too. Very, very interested to see what that looks like for the finals. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Gentry Estes will be with us from 8 o'clock live from Omaha. Tennessee back in action tomorrow. They'll take on the winner of Florida State and North Carolina, which takes place later today. Tennessee with an opportunity to punch their ticket to the College World Series final with a win tomorrow. So we'll get Gentry's thoughts on that coming up at 8 o'clock. We got a lot of Titans to get into today with PK. We'll take your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025. PK, there's a lot of ground I want to cover with you today. I want to start on the Jeffrey Simmons front, though, because we've talked about pretty much everything outside of Jeffrey Simmons heading into this season. There's been a lot of change on the defensive side of the ball, offensive side of the ball. And I still look at this team, and if they're going to make the playoffs, if they're going to put together a season that's even worthy of a playoff chase down the second half of the season, to me, he's going to have to be a huge part of it, and he's going to have to be a bigger part of it than he was a year ago. And I don't think that Jeffrey Simmons played poorly a year ago. I don't think that he's been bad by any stretch of the imagination. But he's getting paid $23.5 million per season. He is the sixth highest paid defensive tackle in the league behind Chris Jones, Wilkins, Derek Brown, Quinnen Williams, and Matabuke up in Baltimore. So he's the sixth highest paid defensive tackle in football. And I don't know that he gave you the sixth highest paid defensive tackle quality of play a year ago on a consistent enough basis. And, you know, we've talked about Simmons and the leadership and all that stuff as a part of it before. But my question for you is, as we begin to unpack what his role is going to look like this year with no Autry around him, you've got Landry, but still some questions, I think, with pass rush and how effective those guys are going to be. Can T'Vondre Sweat stay on the field? What does a season worthy of the contract begin to look like for Jeffrey Simmons as we look ahead to 2024?
Yeah, I would agree with you. It was not a great year, and 2022 was not as great a year as you'd like either.
Yep.
You go back to that season, 7.5 sacks, 9 tackles for a loss, 14 quarterback hits, second team All-Pro, Pro Bowl. But he had 2 sacks in the last 7 games, 3 tackles for a loss. He missed week 17. That was after. So he suffered the ankle injury in October against Indianapolis. He played 2 more games where he fought through it. Then he missed week 10. Then after that, those poor numbers. Autry was out for 4 of those games with his knee injury, so he didn't have his running mate. And he wasn't the same on that ankle. So there's misfortune in there, but you know, it's part of it, right?
Yep.
So you're sympathetic that he's hurt, but you also want him to be effective while he's hurt, or not as ineffective while he's hurt. You want him not to be as ineffective while Autry's not there. And then last year, he suffers the knee injury in week 13 versus Indy. Misses the last 5 games. Probably could have come back late if they were in any kind of contention. But he's not been in these 2 seasons, you know, a Dexter Lawrence, an Aaron Donald, a Quinnen Williams, a Chris Jones. There are a lot of and nobody's an Aaron Donald, obviously. But there are a lot of interior linemen who've been more consistently impactful. I would think he's really motivated to be back to that guy, healthy, now in a new defense, you know, could be moved around a little bit more. I'm curious, and I don't know if he'll share, like, I think if you approach him and talk to him about this, like, do you feel like there's more for you? He'll be insulted by the idea that you're indicating that there wasn't that there wasn't a full body of work in the previous 2 years. I don't know if he was here for all of the OTA stuff. It could have been inside rehabbing. I don't know if this knee thing required surgery and took him into this, and they're being cautious with him or not. if he was healthy and he wasn't around, you know, and they're guarding against letting that be known, I'll just say Derrick Henry wasn't an OTA guy. But last year when there was a new offense installed and he had a new position coach, he was around.
Yep.
And he said that's why he was around. So if Jeffrey Simmons was healthy and could have been on the field during any of this, I would have expected the same thing from him. New defense, new coordinator, new position coach. As a leader and a primary guy, I should be around and I should be on the field.
Yep.
Now, the Titans intentionally leave that hazy. I don't think that serves anyone well. Hey, he's in there rehabbing, would have been good clarity. Then you know, and you don't ask that question.
Right.
They leave it vague. His agent leaves it vague, who I reached out to several times. Teron Davenport has a good relationship with his agent, and he wasn't able to say whether he was in the building or not during that. That leaves me to think, and I don't want to speculate, that he wasn't in the building for at least some of it.
Yeah.
Because if he was, I think the agent just says he's there. You know, Legarius Sneed's guy said he's there some, he's not there some. So if he wasn't there, you know, and we knew it, I would have hit him a little bit for that. He's a little bit of a sacred cow. Last year, he's 36th in Pro Football Focus in amongst interior defenders. He's 27th in pass rush amongst interior defenders. Those numbers, like you're saying, do not reflect the pay, even adding in the injury.
Yeah, and they're paying him to be elite. And quite frankly, this defense needs him to be elite, because if he's not, I'm not sure that they're going to be equipped enough in other areas, particularly with their pass rush, to overcome that. So they need him to be an elite player this year. We'll take your thoughts on Jeffrey Simmons.
Last year, and we're going to get into this more, but it was giving up 121 yards to Devin Singletary.
Yeah.
It was getting shredded by Zach Moss.
Yeah. Le'Veon Bell. It's Le'Veon Bell out there. Zach Moss. That's right. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Your thoughts on Jeffrey Simmons, the contract that he has, and the expectations for what that should mean for him heading into this season in 2024 with a new defense, with Denard Wilson coming in. We'll take your thoughts on all that on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com in the house with me for the next 2 days here on the program. We're talking all things Tennessee Titans. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Jeffrey Simmons, paid to be an elite player, and it hasn't worked out that way the last couple years. Again, you know, I know Titans fans are going to hear this, be like, oh, God, they're bashing Jeffrey Simmons.
We're not.
Not bashing Jeffrey Simmons. He's been fine. But they're paying him to be elite, and they need him to be elite heading into this year. And like I said last segment, PK, if he's not, then I don't know how this Titans defense overcomes that. Like, they need him with Denico Autry gone, with what I would describe as an okay pass rush. Like, I feel really good about Harold Landry, and I feel good about Simmons. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, I have no idea what Tavondre Sweat is going to give them from a pass rush standpoint. Arden Key on the other side at edge rusher, Rashad Weaver. Those guys have not, to this point in their careers, and you know, Key's a little bit more proven than Weaver is, but those guys are not elite pass rushers. So I don't know what the Titans are going to bring to the table from a pass rushing standpoint that's going to be good enough if Simmons isn't a force up the middle. And, you know, Landry's, I think, healthy and fine, but they need more than Harold Landry.
Yeah.
Rushing the passer.
If you're blocking the Titans, you can really focus on Simmons and Landry and take your chances, I think, with the other guys. That's why you need Sweat to be healthy and trim, quote unquote, and out there from the start. You know, I was all right. I don't have a huge problem with guys missing spring stuff, but I wrote yesterday about guys who could least afford to miss training camp stuff, and he's right there at the top of that list, along with some other obvious choices. But they're very reliant on Sweat being next to Simmons.
Yep.
They're thin on the defensive line beyond that. They have some promising guys, but not, you know, star-level type guys. Simmons needs to carry that group of defensive linemen. Simmons needs to carry that front seven. It's clear we're going to see the most blitzing we've seen in a long time. They've had a front four. They've been at their best during the Vrabel era. They were at their best when they could rush with a front four, you know. And when Bud Dupree was playing well, and you had Dupree and Landry and Autry and Simmons,
it's the strength of their team.
That was pretty good. And you need that to be a strength of your team. Titans now, the strength of their team is coverage, but it's hard for the strength of your team to be coverage. You know, if the strength of your team is coverage, that's great, but you could still only cover for so long. You know, Simmons needs to have a big year, and the primary thing that's hurt him are the two injuries,
yeah,
the ankle and the knee. And so I'm sure he's worked on things that he feels like will help him stay healthier, avoid injuries. Some are unavoidable, obviously. The new strength and conditioning guys will work with him on stuff like that as well. And, you know, when he's mean, he's at his best, and I'm sure he'll be playing angry and mean over some of these things that we're talking about. That'll be tone setting things for the Titans. He's the guy in the huddle who does the talking the most and sets the tone for on a Sunday, you know, 20 minutes before kickoff. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to expect big things. He wants to be mentioned with those other guys. And, you know, but the other thing is, you know, when he becomes the highest paid or whatever he was when he got the contract, it hasn't taken long for guys to get in front of him. I know we're going to talk about Trevor Lawrence later. And that's just the nature of the league, right? If you're highest paid or close to the highest paid at your position, it doesn't take long for you to get bumped down. But it is hard right now to mention him with some of the guys we listed there, because he's not elite snap to snap the way some of those guys are. You'd certainly rather face him than Chris Jones right now, or maybe Dexter Lawrence, or some of these other guys who are, quite frankly, doing better. And the run defense last year was an issue too often, and he is a centerpiece in that. Now, he didn't get enough help, so it's hard to dole out, you know, how much is Simmons and how much is everything. But I know he was embarrassed by a lot of those efforts.
Well, and
team efforts.
There's no doubt. And some of the answer this year is going to be, what is Sweat? What does he bring to the table? What do the other guys around him do? Having said that,
and that's got to be a weird position for Simmons.
Yeah,
he's not going to say that out loud, but I wonder if he thinks that privately. You know, Autry's gone, and they pin me to this guy with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Now they love him, and I watched the Outland Trophy winner, and he looked damn good. But there is some doubt here about his weight, about, you know, the rap on him was about commitment and that kind of stuff. And now he missed OTAs with a, you know, mystery injury. And I haven't really, you know, I guess maybe they spent some time together behind the scenes. But I've got to get to know this guy and help lift him up. And there's uncertainty for me connected to this guy. I have nothing to, you know, that's a choice made. Now, it happens all the time. But he's going into the meat years of his career, and he's somewhat reliant on this mystery man.
Well, and, you know, until Sweat takes off at the NFL level, if I'm another team game planning for the Titans right now, I'm not saying that you're double teaming Simmons every play, but he's going to see his fair share of that. And we've talked about this before. It's not like Chris Jones doesn't see that. It's not like Aaron Donald back in his heyday didn't see that. And again, you know, it's unfair in some ways to compare people to Aaron Donald. But you got to find a way to break through that and get off of that more than I think he has in the last couple of years here.
And I thought Terrell Williams was a good coach, but I didn't like Terrell Williams' philosophy on double teams against
which
him.
Which was basically nothing you can do.
Yeah. Well, you're taking up two men and somebody else has to win. Because Simmons double-teamed a good share of the time, and Terrell Williams was just basically saying on those snaps he can't win or be impactful. And I agree with you. I mean, there are all those guys that we're talking about are double-teamed virtually all the time, and they find ways to be impactful. So I'm curious and anxious to talk to Denard Wilson and Tracy Rocker about what they expect a premier defensive tackle to do against a double team and what qualifies as a win in those situations, and see if there's an attitude shift on the coaching end.
How much blitzing you think we're going to see? I mean, just based on what you've – the history of Denard Wilson, the places he's been, and what you've kind of seen to this point in the offseason, how much blitzing you think we're going to see? Also based on maybe need that they've got with this roster right
now. Yeah, well,
now.
Also based on player acquisition. I mean, Kenneth Murray is not a particularly great player in space. His strength is coming forward. And so when you sign that guy and say you're going to play to his strengths, he's pretty good. He's a better blitzer than he is at some of the other job requirements of that inside linebacker position. I think McCreary can be a pretty good blitzer. I think they're going to blitz significantly more than we've seen out of roster construct and need. So, I mean, we've talked over and over. Outside of Landry, you know, now they've talked about Key and they've called him a situational pass rusher. When I talked to him, he said, you know, I've been called a situational pass rusher my whole career, but I've played a lot more snaps than most situational pass rushers, and it's in my hands. He's expecting to be more than that. He's going to be more than that because who are they playing in front of him on first and second down?
Exactly.
But I do think, you know, Denard Wilson cites Todd Bowles and Greg Williams, and, Greg Williams in particular is a maniacal blitzer. From everywhere at any time. So that's a lot different than what we saw under Mike Vrabel, who tried very hard, out of necessity, to rush with the front four and cover with numbers because he didn't have very good defensive backs. So the roster construct is totally different now. And I think we'll see it, and it'll be interesting. Now, how much they do it out of need and how much they do it out of design, I think that'll be the interesting thing to me. And maybe the two will become one. We'll see.
You know, you got called out while you're on vacation.
Yeah.
By Brian Callahan.
I did see it.
Where's PK?
I sent him a
What's
note.
He doing? Where's he at? Saw the beach picture.
Inside, outside. I was glad he mentioned it was voluntary. That vacation was scheduled before Brian Callahan was hired. That, you know, those 38 houses, you gotta
get in there quick, man. They get booked up. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More with Paul Kuharsky coming up next. We'll get more into the Titans. How much ground have the Titans made up on the rest of the AFC South this offseason? More on that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan. Today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. Pregame at 6:20. First pitch, 6:35. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us talking all things Tennessee Titans. So the question is, heading into this season, how much ground have the Titans made up on the rest of the division? Obviously, things did not go well last year. A fourth-place finish in the division. A surprising Texan team that went from worst to first, won the division last year. Jacksonville started strong, fell apart at the end of the year. Indianapolis one game away from making the playoffs, and then there was the Titans, who were just not in contention last year. So there was a lot of work to do. They fired the coach. Lots of change this offseason that we've discussed ad nauseum here. When you factor in the complete picture to this point, and we'll see if there's another ad at the safety position that the Titans may or may not do before training camp rolls around. But based on where we are today, PK, as you look around the rest of the division, how much ground do you think the Titans have covered? How much ground still left to go for the Titans in terms of their pursuit of the rest of the division here?
Well, I went back and looked at the head-to-head matchups last year and thought about looking at it that way. So, you know, you go to the first game against the Texans last year. They lost 19-16. They gave up 26 carries and 121 yards to Devin Singletary.
Yep.
All right, Devin Singletary's replaced now by what seems to be a pretty good upgrade in Joe Mixon. So that doesn't bode well. That first game, Case Keenum played. He threw 3 incompletions and 26 passes, 229 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Got sacked 4 times. That's okay. Tennessee, Levis threw a pick, 17 for 26, 199 yards, sacked 5 times. This is going to be a theme that comes up a lot. Rushing game was horrific. 30 carries for 66 yards, 16 carries for 9 yards for Derrick Henry. So the big question out of that game for me, and I think for most people, was the offensive mindset by the play caller and the head coach. Why are you continuing to give the ball to Derrick Henry when he's averaging less than a yard a carry? Their thinking was that the best possible thing that was going to happen, or their best thing, was you keep giving it to Henry and there's a chance he's going to pop one. My thinking was, it's clear it's not working for Derrick Henry today, and you've got to do something different. So in regards to the microcosm of closing the gap with Houston on that day, in that setting, can you stop Joe Mixon better? Remains to be seen. You would hope, if Sweat pans out the way you think he's going to pan out, the Titans do, that they can play better run defense. And the answer would be yes. You would give up less than 26-121 to Mixon. Can you protect Levis better than 5 sacks? Well, the offensive line has been one of the primary stories of the offseason. And will you change your mindset away from beating your head against a wall with something that's not working with this new coaching staff on offense? I think that would be a definite yes.
That's probably the one I feel the best about.
Yes. The second game was a 26-3 loss. They did a little better against Singletary, 16 for 80. C.J. Stroud was back, 24 for 32, 213 yards. They only sacked him once, 102.7 rating. Rankins had a 13-yard fumble return off of a Levis fumble, and the Titans were sacked 6 times, Tannehill 5 times, Levis once. So overall, Singletary got them 42 carries, 201 yards, a 4.8-yard average. The Titans were sacked 11 times. Bad run defense, bad pass protection. Do you have reason to expect both of those are better? I mean, they've been themes. Titans, we know, had a great offseason in terms of player acquisition. Who are the teams that contend for best offseasons with them? The Texans are right there.
Yep.
Added Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, Aziz, C.J. Henderson, who's a project cornerback, Jeff Okuda, who's a project quarterback. One of them hits, they're in great shape. Fadukasi on the defensive line, Stephon Diggs by trade, Joe Mixon.
Yep.
Drafted Lassiter, another cornerback, so they've really attacked cornerback. Offensive tackle Blake Fisher, 59th. And their losses, they offset by what they gained. Sheldon Rankins, George Fant, Devin Singletary, Blake Cashman, Jonathan Grenard. They seem to have upgraded on all those spots. I'd say their offseason probably as good, if not better, than the Titans.
I would agree.
So have they closed the gap on Houston? I don't, if so, slightly.
Yeah.
You know, in the coaching mindset, that like you said there, in terms of not beating their head against the wall with something like giving Henry 16 carries when he's doing absolutely nothing, yes. But personnel-wise, I think it's probably about the same as it was. I mean, the Titans' personnel is better.
Yeah.
But Houston's personnel is also slightly better. Well, Titans got more better than Houston did.
The thing that scares you, or at least scares me, when I hear you break it down that way, is how big of a problem handling their pass rush was a year ago for the Titans. And then you factor in they now have Autry and Danielle Hunter to go along with Will Anderson and everything else that they had there already.
Yeah.
It's pretty lethal combination.
I mean, Houston's really good on paper.
Yep.
Now, the question is, you know, second-year stuff for rookies like Anderson and Stroud, it doesn't always go smoothly. The league has a new book on them, an off-season to consider how to attack them or defend them.
Is Diggs going to come in there by game five and blow up when he's not getting the football
enough?
In
his second year, yeah. That receiving core, I'll say that. You know, you've got Dell and Collins
yep.
and Diggs, and the Titans are very equipped to match up with three receivers like that with what they have in the defensive backfield now. The second safety spot you're a little concerned about. I don't question Molden's toughness or his smarts. I question his speed and his durability. But they're more equipped to handle that for sure. And they didn't get abused by those receivers last year the way they got abused by Calvin Ridley, and we'll get to Jacksonville here in a bit. You know, can they stand toe-to-toe with Houston head-to-head? Yeah, absolutely possible. Are they going to stand toe-to-toe with them over 18 weeks in terms of what they do? I mean, the difference in the matchups that they get, they avoid Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, that's good. You play the Chargers instead of the Chiefs. The other two are not that big and drastic. And so, look, surprises happen all the time. But am I going to be the guy that goes out on a limb and says the Titans are eclipsing Houston at this point? No, I'm going to be mainstream with everybody else and say, you know, I think Houston's one of the three best teams in the AFC, and that they'll live up to the billing. And I think they probably win 11 games. And that people feel pretty good about them, and that if they peak at the right time and they stay healthy in the right ways, that they could make a charge to the AFC Championship.
Everything on paper feels right about Houston, right? Like they've every addition you just talked about. I mean, they feel like they've got a chance to be a much better team this year than they were a year ago. Now, you always leave room for, you know, is there a sophomore slump from Stroud? Injuries that we can't sit here and predict on June 18th. I mean, that always factors into the equation somehow. But it's hard to look at Houston and not come to the conclusion that they're going to be the overwhelming favorite in the division.
And I think, you know, keeping Bobby Slowick was
a big deal.
Big.
Yeah.
And, you know, he probably felt he wasn't ready. And I think some of the hiring teams felt he wasn't ready. And so D'Amico Ryans, you know, heck of a coach in his first year, growing a thing with a full off season, a full hand in, you know, in the scouting process that maybe you don't have as a coach coming in your first year. But you keep that staff intact to the degree that you want. And keep your offensive coordinator, who's a quarterback whisperer for your guy, And he may not be there next year.
Yep.
He may be a head coach next year. That's another reason why there's this go after it mentality. And, look, they were terrible for a long stretch. And so the hunger and the desire and the, you know, feeling like they're due or deserve it. Not that they're sitting back coasting on a deserve it kind of thing. But, like, they're ready for it after what they went through and finally having the good year and feeling it and knowing what it feels and tastes like now. I think they're well run.
Yep.
You know, they're a long way from Easterby.
Well, and like you said, we're going to get into the Lawrence part of this a little bit later, but they're also not paying a ton of money for a quarterback right now, and they've loaded up around him heading into this year. So,
which is the way to go. They got a 4-year window here. Yep. With that, or to, you know, before even if you sign him after 3 years, you keep that cap hit down in the fourth year. Now, you know, is Stroud as good as he was? We'll see. But even if he regresses a little bit, you know, they've got a back now in Mixon.
Yep.
I'm not a huge Mixon guy, but he's clearly better than what they've had.
Yep.
Where they were piecemealing things together. He's clearly better than Devin Singletary.
No doubt about it. So what about Indianapolis and Jacksonville? Had the Titans closed the gap on those teams? We'll get into that. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We're taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025.
We were just reminiscing about our high school tryouts. My boy is heading into day two of his he's a rising freshman.
Yeah.
So he's trying out at Ravenwood, which is rather intimidating based on the number of kids. And, you know, he's played on that field once or twice. But, you know, walking in yesterday, I could tell he was pretty nervous. 2 hours, hot,
yeah.
Middle of the day, everything. Coming off, it felt pretty good about his day one performance. So, and he was bouncing around the house after that. So hopefully he has a good second day. But what do you remember? Like, I didn't have tryouts, like, out of season.
Yeah.
We just had, like, you know, a couple weeks before the season, and then you found out. There wasn't even really an announcement. You were just getting your uniform. And when you got your uniform, you found out. So I made varsity. And I went to a small private school.
Yeah.
So I made varsity as a freshman based on my glove.
Yeah.
And then they were going to let me suffer as a hitter in order to, you know, hoping that I would get good later, which I never really did. I was never much of a hitter.
Yeah.
And I wound up fielding nervously at times, but I was a good infielder. But the old coach, who was a classic guy,
yeah,
just, you know, gave me a varsity uniform, and I was like, holy crap. And he said, don't screw it up, kid.
Thanks.
Now that's my making the team story.
No, I remember we had baseball tryouts, and from the summer of eighth grade heading into ninth, we were still playing with a lighter bat.
Yeah.
And when you went into high school, you got to play with a heavier bat. So I spent all week before tryouts practicing with a heavier bat. And then you get to tryouts, and they're like, oh, you can use your old bat. It doesn't matter. So I got up there with the old bat, and I was swinging so fast I couldn't make contact with the ball. And it was just straight panic for about the first five pitches. And finally I said, hey, hold up. Let me go get that heavier bat. Brought the heavier bat back, and it was fine after that. But I thought that I was going to get through the whole tryout and not making contact with the ball through the first five pitches.
That's interesting. You know, it's funny to me. I think, like, your house and your yard can really shape what you're good at,
yep,
right? So I had a big driveway that could serve as, like, a mini tennis court. So my buddy, who is a soccer player across the street, we played soccer tennis there all the time. Now, we never put up a net. We just kind of made a rule.
Yep.
But so the touch stuff I was good at soccer came from us playing this game constantly.
Yep.
And then next to my garage, there was a brick strip about maybe a yard wide. And so I threw tennis balls when I was younger and later lacrosse balls against that and fielded barehand against that. My whole, you know, I'd go out there for hours at a time sometimes, fielding ground balls. And so I became a good fielder of ground balls doing that, pretending I was Greg Nettles. But I was never hitting in my backyard practicing. And so, you know, but when we got into those, you know, the tryout phase or the 3 weeks before baseball season started, you know, and sometimes in New Jersey it snowed at that point, you're inside in the gym and you're having kind of a knockout ground ball contest.
Yep.
And he's hammering balls off the gym floor. Well, I'm not hesitating at all because this is a modified thing of my driveway game.
Yeah.
But if I lived in a different house that didn't have that strip next to the garage,
you'd be getting pelted.
Yeah, well, who knows what I would have done instead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That is wild. Think about it that way in terms of your surrounding kind of affecting what you're good at.
Yeah, what you do.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to hear other people who had other situations that dictated their sport practice life.
615-737-1025. Good luck to your son in day two today coming up in tryouts. Going through the Titans division here, how much ground have the Titans made up? We've gone through the Houston part of it. What about with Jacksonville? Jacksonville started off great last year and then fell apart at the end of the season. Trevor Lawrence apparently playing through some injuries, but not enough to keep him off the field. But nonetheless, the Jacksonville Jags go from first place in the division to missing out on the playoffs last year, pretty similar to what the Titans did the year before. What about the Titans and their pursuit of Jacksonville?
And we'll get to Trevor Lawrence's contract later, independent of this. So the first game, Titans lost 34-14, pretty miserable. Lawrence ran for 2 touchdowns. Ridley, 7 catches for 103 yards and 2 touchdowns. Pretty unstoppable. Jaguars, 3 for 4 on 4th down and 3 for 5 in the red zone. And and based on those 4th downs, the Titans got crushed in time of possession. Jacksonville had it for over 36 minutes. The Titans had it for under 24 minutes. You know, what do you do to catch up to them there? Well, I mean, I think you could play better defense against a Ridley-esque player who now they're counting on Gabe Davis being. You weaken them by stealing their best receiver who's now playing for you. Ridley in the second game, which the Titans won, had 6 catches for 106 yards and a touchdown. So in 2 games, Ridley had 13 for 209 and 3 touchdowns. That's pretty damn
good.
Right, pretty efficient. So he's no longer a problem for you. In the second game, you know, with playing a little bit for Vrabel's fate, Henry's swan song that everybody had a feeling for, he ran 19 for 153 and a touchdown. You got interceptions from Edmonds and Sean Murphy bunting, and the Titans were 3 for 3 in the red zone, played pretty efficiently, 128-20. I didn't feel like there was a massive gap between the Titans and the Jags based on those results. you know, it's really about, to me, it was kind of a Peterson-Vrabel matchup, though the Titans being hurt was a thing. Lawrence didn't do great damage outside of running for those 2 touchdowns. You know, the sacks from my notes here weren't a devastating factor. You know, so I think the Titans and the Jaguars, in terms of head to head, always feel like they're pretty even to me. Now the Jags added Eric Armstead, who the Titans were interested in. They lost that. Mitch Morse, not as good an addition as Cushenberry. Gabe Davis, not as good a receiver as Ridley, though a threatening guy, but the Titans are equipped to handle him. Mac Jones is their backup quarterback. Ronald Darby, a little bit of a project. Devin Duvernay as a receiver slash returner. They add Brian Thomas in the draft. Mason Smith, a defensive tackle in the draft. They lost Fadukasi on the defensive line and Ridley. So I don't feel like they got significantly better by any means. I feel like they're kind of the same.
Yep.
And the biggest thing for them is another year of Lawrence with Peterson. And the expectations on Lawrence now with the contract, which we're going to talk about separately. So I do think the Titans have closed the gap on the Jaguars in terms of personnel. Now, the Jags missed the playoffs by a game. Titans knocked them out last year after vice versa the year before. So I think they're in pretty good shape against the Jaguars in a head-to-head capacity. I don't know about, a split seems, pretty natural there. Yep. I don't know about, the Jaguars versus the league and the Titans versus the league. I think that comes down to Callahan and what kind of season Callahan and his staff have and how the personnel gels and all of these big, broad questions about the Titans and how they perform. And for the Jaguars, all of their big questions, which start with Lawrence and how they balance things out, how they replace Ridley and everything. I'm not super inspired by the Jaguars.
No.
But I do think they are a team that can cause some problems. And I would give them the benefit of the doubt over the Titans right now just because of how many unknowns there are with the Titans.
Well, they were one of the talks of the offseason last year, and obviously – things fell apart on them in the second half of the year. They still got plenty of talent, right? Like, a lot of those guys that were there last year are still there. Ridley, obviously, a big departure, and you've got him on your team now. So I think it's unquestionable that the Titans have closed the gap on Jacksonville. How does it play out over the course of the 17-game season? To me, that's pretty simple. That comes down to how well does Lawrence play, how well does Levis play.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that answer comes down to me.
And here's another situation where I think that Jags have done a disservice to Lawrence. And I was on vacation last week, so maybe some of this came out in the contract stuff. How hurt was he last year?
Exactly.
Like, after the fact, I think I understand keeping these things quiet during, especially a quarterback injury. You don't want details out about a quarterback injury, how bad it is or the specifics of it, because people can target it and all of that. But after the fact, if he's your guy, if you're about to sign him to a $200 million contract, I'd want to make it pretty clear how much last year's performance was affected by injury.
Go into as much detail as possible.
Right?
Yeah.
You'd want to make it clear. Hey, this is our guy. And by the way, last year when he was struggling from, during October or whatever it was, he was dealing with X, which was pretty bad, by the way.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the league's hesitancy to do that. I don't think that makes a guy soft or anything. I think after the season's over, give me as much clarity as you can about why things went the way they did if they went poorly. It's not excuse making. It's information adding. And when they fail to do that, I think you leave a guy looking bad. And I just always use the Fred Taylor example.
Yep.
Fred Taylor still, if you ask most people who watch Fred Taylor play, say he's a good back, but he's soft. And they think he's soft because Tom Coughlin said, he's got a groin strain.
Yeah.
He's got a groin strain. And people thought, this guy can't get back from a groin strain. He can't. Whatever. And it turned out, later on, we find out his groin was torn off the bone.
It's a little bit different.
Well, when his groin is torn off the bone, you give him a lot more leeway than when he can't play, can't get it back in 3 weeks from a groin strain.
Yes.
And so you've hurt his public perception.
Yep.
And I think that's a huge disservice to a guy. Now, the coach doesn't care, ultimately. Coach only cares about the pro. But I think as a coach, you need to care about that for a player after the season's over.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? It may have looked like Fred Taylor wasn't able to come back. But in fact, at the end of the season press conference, you say, he actually tore the groin off the bone.
Yep.
And we were, trying to make it look like whatever, and Fred was toughing it out as best he could. But he was really hurt.
Yep.
How does that hurt you?
I don't for the life
of
me.
It's a stupid NFL mentality.
We'll have more on the Titans division coming up next. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.